This is the Saturday Supplement. I'm Frank Lewis. She always said, I'll bring the buns. And even when she didn't say it, you knew she would anyway. With that kind of arsenal, who could resist? But much more powerful was her commitment. She worked full-time in a voluntary capacity for 25 years. And she was always full of life and fun, clearly hugely enjoying what she was at. Her reward was seeing her town transformed, the supreme acknowledgement that when Killarney won the National Tidy Towns competition in 2011. Today we remember and celebrate Yvonne Quill of College Street and Barleymount, who sadly passed away last October at the too early age of 71. My guides through this rich, inspiring and happy story are Yvonne's husband John and daughter Sandra and Lee. Over the next 2 hours, we'll hear when the bakery went on fire, spending time living on Countess Road, enabling the community to lead, supported by the local authority. On College Street, worrying the friars. The unique cafe, the shop, home and bakery, transforming the appearance of Killarney. Daily walks in the National Park, wild and cultivated. Rosie's Beach to Killarney House. First across the threshold to open Mucker's House. The first to arrive when James Gleeson died in an explosion. Loving granddaughter Anna's art. Today's programme was recorded on March the 12th. Your comments for later use in other programmes, write Frank Lewis, Gillon, Mangerton Road, Mucker's, Killarney. Email franklewismangerton@gmail.com, text 083 300 3300 or phone 066 71 23666. And now, to begin. In College Street, at what was the cafe where generations of the Courtney Fleming Quill family lived and worked, we're joined by Aileen O'Callaghan, who, with her two sisters, worked here as a teen and young adult and stayed in touch. Lisa Corkery, from the age of 15, one of the last people to work in the old cafe with Yvonne and stayed a family friend. And Christy McCarthy, friend and customer every morning with the telecom boys. They had their own table set and ready every morning. Their order was already known. Aileen, the story of your wedding cake.
She made our wedding cake, and it was the worst day that was ever. That day was a storm, there was floods and everything, and when she was delivering the cake to the hotel, the top tier fell off and was destroyed. And she, it didn't faze her. Now, in fairness, she came and took the artificial tier off the window of the cafe and brought it out. Never said it until after the wedding.
Lisa, Yvonne also made your wedding cake.
My aunt in the Hendy stores had told Yvonne I'd got engaged, and word filtered to Mill Street anyway that Yvonne was making the cake, and don't go any further, this was, you know, going to be Yvonne's gift. Yeah. But she made a fabulous cake. Weeks and months went into it. It was absolutely amazing. And we went down to the Sneem Hotel. Of course, I was oblivious to a lot of it while it was going on, but didn't the cake end up getting locked into the car? So I think there was John, the priest, my brother-in-law, mechanic, and Yvonne outside, and there were, you know, other people were trying to shield me from this.
Why could they not get into the car?
They'd locked the keys into the car. Yeah, and the cake was inside, so there was utter panic outside of how they were going to get the cake out. And I think John's car bore the scars of that for a long time after. We'll just say there was a clothes hangers involved in the end, but the cake came out. But there was going to be no way it was going to stay inside anyway. If the car had to be opened with a tin opener, it was coming out, and that was it.
As an observer of the passing scene, something that might not be known, Christy, Yvonne and a man down in his luck.
Sleeping rough, but every morning of the week the cafe would be packed. He would end up on the first table inside the door here, and Yvonne would feed him. It didn't always go smooth. The cafe would be filling up, and Yvonne would say, come on now, it's time for you to go, time for you to go. He'd stand up at the door, he'd say, you were one thundering bitch. And then maybe 5 or 10 minutes afterwards he'd come to the door and he'd say, I'm sorry Yvonne.
People who were helped Sandra in the cafe, there wasn't just one person.
There is quite a number of, growing up as a child watching that was, you know, we were just taught that everyone was treated the same, so I know there was one little gentleman who used to just knock on the window of the cafe, and either my grandmother or me or my mother would come out with just a bag of food for him, and he'd go off, and I don't think we even ever knew his name.
John.
Yvonne was stopped in the street about 2 years ago And he said, I need to speak with you. This is embarrassing. My family dealt with Miss Courtney's for maybe 30 years. We left a large bill. And he said, I'm moving on in years and I don't want to go to my grave without having it cleared. And I'm sure I may not be in a position to clear it now. So Yvonne says to him, I'll tell you what you'll do. Would you go to the friary and get a mass said, and your bill is cleared?
I think it's very fitting that we are remembering Yvonne on a week where we've celebrated International Women's Day, because Yvonne was that iconic woman. She was a strong businesswoman. She was kind. She was empathetic. She was fun.
You also did your stint in the cafe. Sandra, your mother Yvonne was soft when it came to pricing. One year you said you'd open for takeaway sandwiches and drinks for the Munster final. You upped the price by 20 pence.
I was just making it even, you know, that it would be handy that they'd, you know, hand in two coins or whatever it was. And she couldn't cope at all with it because she thought it was too expensive, you know, for the sandwiches. And I said to her, you know, Mom, these people are coming from Cork or whatever. They're well used to paying twice that for their sandwiches. So we had it out. And in the end, I just put the foot down. No, I said, I'm not having it, Mom. That's what we're charging. So in the end, I ended up having to take the money because she just couldn't do it.
John, your first sighting of Yvonne...
I was walking up on the street here one day. I suppose I was maybe 16, 17. I saw this lady coming across with the tray, a big tray up here on her hand. And she walked across the street. And I threw an eye at her. I didn't know who she was. I can still see this black skirt. Not a mini skirt, but showing enough leg to be interesting. And...
Your daughter is disgusted at you.
She looked anyway at me with a kind of a cheeky grin, yeah. And didn't say hello or didn't say anything. And I looked back at the cheek with a cheeky grin, and that was it. I continued on. She went into the cafe, which I didn't even know where she was going at the time. But then we met up in the Franciscan New Club a couple of weeks after.
Eileen, Yvonne was interested in everybody, family, staff, friends. She wanted to see everybody getting on.
Even though I was working there as a summer job, she encouraged me to better myself. And John was working in Foss at the time. And she said, Eileen, go off now and do an office procedures course. Move on now and better yourself. And I did.
Christy, the tables in the cafe could tell about more legal deals than the courthouse.
It was rather remarkable, especially at courthouse mornings. You'd find the judge in one corner, staying very quiet, very isolated looking, and then would arrive the lawyers with their clients. And I can assure you, there was many a heated discussion, and I'd say many a case was solved with the help of a cup of coffee and a few soothing buns.
Not only did she provide your wedding cake, but she was taking the photographs as well.
My photos as well, yeah. Well, it was actually Christy Clinton who was taking our photographs the day of our wedding, but she followed him around all day and took the same photographs. She knew he wasn't going to be impressed, but she still did it. And she came out to the house the following day with them all developed and everything, and it was just fantastic.
Lisa,
Yvonne could hear you mention a party at 50 paces and she'd be on and say, oh, I'll make the cake again for my 21st, her very famous banoffee. She was a great banoffee baker and she made that for my 21st. So this story relates in that somebody was having a party and Yvonne herself had decided to make the cake and it was going to be banoffee here in the cafe. So we were on the ground floor and the family living area was on the second floor and the bakery for the cafe was on the third floor, but Yvonne put on two tins of condensed milk to make this banoffee cake. And of course on a Saturday it was just so busy, you know, we came down and that was it, you know, the two tins were boiling away above and we heard two shots going off upstairs.
Explosion.
We said, what is going on up there, you know? So ran up the stairs. And in fairness to the Flemings and the Quills, we had free reign of the house. We were part of the family, you know? So we ran upstairs, opened the door into the kitchen. I couldn't believe my eyes. The two tins of condensed milk, which had then turned into caramel, were after exploding all over the kitchen. It was on the walls, on the ceilings. I don't know how they were ever going to get it off. But Yvonne didn't care about that. I was more horrified in the scene where she was, my cake, you know, how am I going to make my banoffee now?
Sandra, Padraig, your grandfather, sent your father John up to the bakery to check a mixer?
It started with Mary, the baker. She was reported that there was an issue with the mixer, that she was getting a shock from it. My grandfather went up and tested it, and he said there was absolutely nothing wrong with the mixer and that she was just imagining it. So it was ongoing, and then Granda decided he would send John Quill up as an independent observer and he'd check out the mixer. Well, Dad was stuck to the floor with the shock that came off the mixer, and he got the fright of his life. So he came down gingerly down the stairs to report, yes, indeed, the mixer was an issue, only for my granddad to throw the eyes to heaven and say, John Quill, you're worse than the women.
John, you didn't think your father-in-law was trying to get rid of you?
No, Frank, we had a great relationship. From the day I met that man until the day he passed on, I don't think we had ever an argument. But I can remember that situation very well. He said, oh, Jesus Christ, you're as bad as the people above. And that was the end of it.
Aileen O'Callaghan, Lisa Corkery and Christy McCarthy, thanks indeed for talking to us.
Thank you. You can count on me like 1, 2, 3, I'll be there.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
You can count on me like 1, 2, 3, I'll be there.
Remembering and celebrating the life of Yvonne Quill with her husband John and her daughter Sandra, now at the front door of Muckross House, joined by Dan Kelleher, Superintendent of Killarney National Park from 1963 to 2001. And Michael Gleeson, former town and county councillor and one of the trustees of Muckross House. Sandra, a special boast of your mother's was that she was the first person to enter the house when it was opened initially for refurbishing.
Dr. Hilliard being there and ushering her through, and he said to her, like, she didn't take any notice at the time, but he said to her, you'd remember this for the rest of your life. Also, she talked about prior to the official opening of coming to the house with her father and taking dust sheets off furniture.
We have with us a man who's historic in more senses than one. I mean, he's just reminded me there that on the official opening, the official party on the official opening in June of 1964, he's now the only living memory from that day. From the 1960s, Yvonne's father, Patrick Fleming, was one of the founding members of the Trustees of Muckross House. Dan, your memory of the trustees in the 60s and 70s?
I think they were unique. They were pioneers. There was a lot of controversy before it was opened. And there was a public meeting in the Artist Foundry at the time. In December, there was a complete outcry because at that stage there was an agreement in principle by the Minister for Finance that he would hand over the house to the CIE, who were then the owners of the Great Southern Hotel, the public institute, because they was be holed up in the hotel every year for about 3 or 4 months. And they was walk out here and they saw the empty house, and being the enterprising people they were, they said something should be come up with, and they decided then that they'd take it over jointly. So there was a public meeting then, and there was a deputation formed, and they went on a deputation to the Minister of Finance saying that they would take over the house, and there was toing and froing, and the decision wasn't taken until May. I was at the show in the RDS. I was sent down to brief one of the commissioners of the OPW. He met the trustees the following morning, and he conveyed approval then of the minister. The minister said he will give him a lease of the house. He tested him for 12 months.
So where we're standing now might now have been the...
It could have been
the Hotel,
yeah.
We're so fortunate, Michael, aren't we, that if it weren't for the action that was taken at that time, led by Dr. Hilliard and people like Patrick Fleming and Mrs. Grosvenor and so on.
The place represents everything that's best, not only in the work that's done here, but in its setting. And I'm enormously proud of all the people who have served here. And we should be eternally grateful to Dan. And we should also be very grateful to the minister, Minister Ryan at the time, who, as far as I know, his great-grandson is playing in the second row for Ireland in the rugby international, Ryan. James Ryan.
John, Yvonne crocheted shawls and pieces for Muckross for sale in the house in the 70s.
The trustees at that stage, they were all putting their shoulders to the wheel with getting things done at cost. or getting things done, you know, that there'd be no, the only prophet would come to Mucker's house.
They were travelling all over the county. I remember Sean O'Connor and Paddy McMonagall later and so on, travelling all over the place, gathering farm machinery, gathering pieces from farmhouses and so on. Indeed. And Padraig, your father-in-law, was very much a part of that.
When they opened the coffee shop, he supplied them with the cakes at cost, no profit for himself, just what the materials cost, and that went on for years.
Sandra.
Mom, she had great stories, of course.
And she was a guide here, of course, as well.
She was, when she was younger, in the early days, and making up a few stories, Frank, I think, as well. I remember her telling me that she mightn't have the answers.
Tradition of the family, I hope you're continuing. Dan, in those early years, as has been suggested by John and Sandra, there was a great shortage of resources.
Oh, completely, completely. I admired them because they had very little.
You remember coming to some of the AGMs?
On a few occasions, a few years, they were afraid to continue because they had nothing. Like, it was a big enterprise with all the people employed and what's going on and everything.
So they had to be bailed out?
And I remember Noel Lynch, he was a nephew of Jack Lynch's, and he said, "Oh, well," he said, "walk away anyway," he says, "and we'll see what we can do next year." He couldn't promise them, but he'd be able to do something then, you see, at the AGM the following year. Yeah. And that gave them the courage and the impetus to keep going. Like.
Yeah. There are people we're all indebted to, Michael, aren't we? Those early trustees with no resources, spending out of their own pockets.
Hugely indebted to them. And it's good that it's recognised, not just locally, nationally, but internationally.
John, joining this family with all of its endless talents, with its deep roots and strong attachments with Killarney.
It's like growing up, I suppose, Frank. It grew on me gradually. They were all doing their own thing. Mrs. Fleming, Peg, she was a real businesswoman. And I really admired the way she used to do business.
But how did she accept you?
Oh, I'm sure. Why wouldn't you? Anyone could accept me. What do you want? What do you want about? Quality, of course, Michael. Yes.
She called him my Johnny. She absolutely loved my dad, and he was.
Why was it?
Why
was that?
I suppose he's got plenty charm, Frank. He might keep it hidden at times, but, you know, plenty charm. What you see is what you get. My dad is just a lovely, gentle person. He's also very capable. He'd have been drafted in to help with all sorts of things at any hour, day and night, and he was always there for my grandparents. My granny doted on him and spoiled him, same as my mother. He was spoiled rotten, this
And his daughter man. Spoils him now.
Oh, I do a bit. Yeah, I do a bit.
Yeah. Dan, I mean, the model of the trustees of Mucker's House, started by Dr. Hilliard, Padraig Fleming, Ty Kerry O'Sullivan, Sean O'Connor, Mrs. Grosvenor and others, managed by Ned Myers, the model of that partnership between the state and a charity, which the trustees are, was unusual and still is.
Well, it was at the time, and that's where sort of there was fear and trepidation on both sides, but I was lucky I was at the coalface between the department and the trustees, and everything happening with the officials.
Did you report both to one another? Did you tell them all the facts?
I didn't, because it can be very dangerous at times. Like, you know. There was a period here, and there was, how do I put it, there was slight conflict.
Yes.
And it was decided then, after so many years, that it should be a joint management of the house with the trustees and the OPW.
That was part of your resources at the time, wasn't it?
You
were taking over the payment of the guides.
There was a very long courtship. There was falling outs and falling ins and whatever, like that in any marriage.
Yeah.
You know? And eventually the marriage was consummated. in 1980, a joint agreement was signed in by the late Tommy McElistrom and Joan Ford.
Yeah.
And Sean O'Keefe, the Lord of Mercy. He represented what you call it,
the town council.
And he was in the trustee, he was chairman of the trustee at the time.
Yeah.
And Father O'Keefe and Mrs. Romer, they were there at the time in 1980.
Yeah.
So after that, then, it was a marriage. And you know what to do when you're in marriage. There's going to be a bit of bickering, whatever. But if you're mature and you're reasonable, you can see you'll come to what an amicable solution.
And so say all of us, Michael.
So say all of us. There are, of course, occasions when there are still little differences of opinion. I think we're singularly fortunate at the moment that the person in the department is a local man from Guinea-Willa, Niall O'Donoghue, with whom the trustees have a wonderful interaction, and he's very supportive of what this is all about and does the best of his ability to ensure that the wider entity that is the park is well looked after. And we have seen that in recent times with the improvement in roads, etc., and we hope that will be ongoing, and that we hope that rapport with the department will remain strong and vibrant, because it's very important that this place would prosper.
Does the model exist anywhere else, though? I mean, I can't think of anywhere else in the country where there is a partnership with a state property of this kind.
I never heard of any other one, but again, just, I think this is important to say, I've just come here now this morning from the Mehel working in the National Park, and the Mehel is an offshoot of Killarney Looking Good, which was the heart and soul of Yvonne's life. Indeed. So you could say the wonderful work that's been done by the Mehel at the moment, trying in some little way to control and limit the spread of that monster that is the rhododendron, is as a result of Killarney Looking Good.
I think the general public in Killarney and Kerry are probably not aware that the trustees are, first of all, it's a charity, nobody gains out of it. Anything that is made is reinvested in what is happening. And that it is unique, and we're very lucky to have it.
Well, it's certainly unique in the sense of that we have never heard of any other such similar place in the country. And the commitment down through the years of the trustees, I must say, is tremendous, and the focus in their meetings is absolute. There's no collecting. We meet for an hour and a half or 2 hours, whatever it is, and it's all about progressing what's here and making it better for everybody. And long may that continue, because it's a special house in a special place in a special county.
Indeed, Dan Kelleher and Michael Gleeson, thank you both for joining us, and we're going to go on to another point.
You can count on me like 1, 2, 3, I'll be there.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
You can count on me like 1, 2, 3, I'll be there.
In search for Yvonne Quill, guided by daughter Sandra and husband John. Today's programme was recorded on March the 12th. Your comments for future programmes, text 083 300 3300 or phone 066 7123 666. Now, outside the monument to the Munster Fusiliers at the Haha near Kenmare Place in Killarney, near the statue of Christ the King, we're joined by fellow Tidy Towns, Killarney Looking Good volunteers, Kathleen Foley, who was litter picking and planting with Yvonne up to five nights a week, travelled all the way from his home in Waterville, Pat Clifford, for 9 years, principal of Fossa National School, and Marlon Cunahan of CASI, the Killarney Asylum Seekers Initiative. Picking and planting up to five nights a week. Kathleen, there was the friendship and the fun. Like the evening Father Murphy got stuck on top of a gate.
The story was relayed to me by Yvonne, and I think it was Donald Mangan and Father Murphy who were collecting litter out on the park road, and Father Murphy, being Father Murphy, couldn't leave anything behind, so he decided to scale the gate, and as he did so, he got stuck on top of the gate and had to be rescued by Yvonne, and I'm sure it was Donald Mangan.
Was his pants showing any permanent signs of damage?
I don't think so. When he saw litter behind a railing, he had to get in there.
Pat, tell me about your first contact with Yvonne.
I took over as principal in Fossa in 2012. And pretty soon after that, I was introduced to Yvonne for the first time. And she was telling me about an initiative. I told her that I was pretty lamentable at something like that, but maybe that if she could give me any advice, I would go at it. I think she soon realised that this would be a job that she'd probably take on herself. She involved the children. The children used to love see her coming. Even the sensory garden that's now still enjoyed by the children with additional needs in Fossa School. It was Yvonne that was initially the person that started that up.
Marlon, your relationship with Yvonne has all to do with brown bread.
we were compiling a recipe book, International Recipes, and we thought that it would be nice to have something that's Irish authentic and a local person. And somebody said, oh, Yvonne Quill, because they used to have a coffee shop in this. So I approached her and she generously agreed. And actually, it's a lovely brown bread that even when I have a chance, I'm not a baker myself, but every time I have a chance, I will always do that recipe.
Home in Barleymount was full of litter pickers and high-vis bibs and green bags.
If anybody rang, Mom, you know, anyone in the community at all, which could be hundreds and hundreds of calls and texts about joining as a volunteer with the Tidy Towns, Mom would be straight out to their house with equipment, so a litter picker and bags, high-vis and gloves, and she would engage with them immediately. And I think she really had a great understanding that the Tidy Towns was a community initiative. It wasn't obviously all of the different businesses and business people were involved too, but she really saw it as part, you know, everybody's job. So from the young children in the schools, teenagers as well in the secondary schools, she'd be out engaging with all of those people. She felt that the town was belonged to the people who lived there. She believed that all the new people moving into town, she welcomed everybody. She loved meeting new people and learning about new cultures. She understood that having young people involved in it was how it would last.
Kathleen, there were rewards. Winning the National Tidy Towns competition in 2011, the Communities in Bloom presentation in Edmonton in Canada.
As a follow-on from winning Killarney Tidy Towns, we were invited to take part in this Canadian competition with an international flavour. After 3 days hard judging in the whole community in Killarney, which included schools, visits to the race course, Rosscastle, Muckross traditional farms, then the competition was being held in Edmonton in October, and we were felt very uneasy about going and representing Killarney. And the two of us headed off to Edmonton, and we had an amazing week there. We met our judges, who barely spoke to us, and we thought, this is a bad omen. We obviously didn't do well, and they don't want to disappoint us. When the results were being announced, you got up to 5 blooms, and then we heard Killarney announced as winner, 5 blooms. So we were very happy, and Yvonne was on her phone texting silently back to Killarney to let them know the good news. And she nearly missed when the announcement was made that Killarney was the best international large
town. Overall winner.
So I took off down the stairs like as if it was the Oscars, and then suddenly realised, Yvonne, that there was something happening, and she came trotting down after me and up on the stage, and they said, you have to say a few words in Irish. So Yvonne kind of said, what am I going to say? So she trotted out a few words in Irish.
Pat, the Fossa National School concert.
I remember when we were doing Annie. That was one of, I think, the first musicals we did. And we were a bit out of our depth. And someone said, you know, maybe Yvonne would try and help us out regarding costumes and everything else. And she was simply outstanding. I suppose Yvonne wasn't a sayer, she was a doer. So in other words, she went off to get some, I remember particularly some sort of a dress for Nancy, and I don't know where she picked it out of or how she got it, but she was just, I mean, this was the type of woman she was, that if she said she was going to do it, she did it. I said in the end that I thought that she might just play a starring role herself in it, but anyway, she declined that particular offer.
Marlon, Kathleen and Yvonne and other Tidy Town people always offered to help in the Kazi community garden.
That first initial about the recipe, and then after that she got involved with that with Kazi, and always texting me, do you need anything? And I said, anything? And she said, yeah, anything. And she always kept her word. And actually, even the last year...
Dangerous to say that to you, I imagine.
Exactly. Exactly. Even last year, and I know she wasn't well, and she would be texting me and apologizing for not calling and all this. And I said, no, it's okay. And really, that's what kind of, it's not just about the walk, but it's this kind of, this connection. One time I was not feeling well, and she texted me, which I thought was lovely, and she said, look, mind yourself, there's only very few good people on earth, and you have to take care of. And I thought it was lovely, and I really feel privileged to honor her. Indeed. Considering I'm not really a Killarney person.
You are almost now. Yeah. Kathleen Foley, Pat Clifford, Marlon Cunahan, thank you indeed for talking to us. We'll move on. We'll talk to you again in a few minutes.
You can count on me like 1, 2, 3, I'll be there.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
You can count on me like 1, 2, 3. I'll be there.
Remembering and celebrating the life of Yvonne Quill in Killarney National Park, just inside the Golden Gates. In fact, it's magnificent here at the moment. I mean, the daffodils are all out on one side, and the lesser celandine are all blooming on the other side, and the jackdaws and the rooks are building nests and calling out, and we're looking down the cherry walk, and the first of the flowers are just coming out there, and the long herbaceous border is looking magnificent even without the kind of blossoms that will happen shortly. Cormac, Yvonne's love and understanding of wild nature, her enthusiasm for the planted, her understanding of the interdependence of flora and fauna, here at the head of the Cherry Drive, already showing the signs of new flowers, as I said, an annual spectacular that delighted her.
She did have a huge love for wild nature, and especially the flora, both the wild, like the bluebell groves, and at the moment now just starting up the wild garlics. She had the camera always. She also made the connections between the bees for the pollination and the making of honey. The bumblebees, she loved them because they were very photogenic. It wasn't just the wildflowers, it was the ornamental flowers, like the beautiful magnolia here. You see them here.
Indeed, they're in bloom at the moment. They're wonderful.
They're just starting up now, the beautiful pink one.
Sandra, swimming in the lakes, cycling as children.
She was a great woman for swimming. She would sea swim winter and summer. And
the whole year round?
Yes.
On a daily basis?
Not on a daily basis, no, but frequently. Yeah. I'd say every week or so.
So you're following in the footsteps?
I prefer to swim in the lake. We were taught the risk, but there was no fear. Being in the park with the grandchildren then, I was dragged in with any change in season. So if it was autumn, she'd have to have photos of the grandkids in the leaves. The bluebells the same. The wild garlic, we'd be out and we'd often collect a bit as well. And she'd be cooking up and making lovely recipes. Yeah.
The symphony in the background, Cormac, the jackdaws and the rooks there.
I love it. And it's the treescape there. And they have a lot of nests and they're active and they're paired off, of course. Yeah. We don't realise that most bird life are like ourselves.
Padraig, you remember the trips to Dublin for the awards.
On the way up, we'd have the discussion about, well, I didn't get any call or any hint. You're going to take the overall award. You'd get some sort of an indication that you'd be prepared for that because you may have to make a short speech, and then you may bring a few other VIPs, which would arrive. Yvonne, it'd be obvious that she was held in very high regard. She'd start working the room. She'd come back with her half-hour report, letting us know, well, no, we're not going to win the overall, but she'd mention a few names and just tip. The next one then was, will we retain our gold medal? She'd go off again on that, and she'd come back and she'd say, look, things are looking good, she said, but you never know. On the way down, the planning would start for the new campaign.
No rest.
Oh, there was no rest. Huge energy and great enthusiasm, and she'd be on about, is there any way now that she'd be going down through a list about anybody that she could bring on board, or we could bring on board, that had enhanced the committee, and that would open other doors to improve better things.
The park is wonderful at the moment, isn't it? It's a wonderful time of the year. It's now, I mean, as you say, the magnolia are here. I was noticing yesterday the camellias are out here. There's some rhododendron showing signs of life here. Padraig, Yvonne was among those who stimulated the collection of wild animals, the sculptures and the information panels opposite the cathedral.
Some of the thinking behind that was to appeal to the younger communities as well, because, okay, you did have the adults on board, but they wanted the next generation to become aware of what we have in Killarney. First of all, the information board went up there, that's the general thing, and that's very high visibility with all lovely, colourful images of the animals. but it's when you go down on the river walk that you want to show what lives on the river banks. We made up a list of animals. There was fierce planning in that because you had them consistent in size, and you had to have something as well that were going to catch the eye of the child. The first couple of weeks when they went up, the amount of inquiries that came through, the amount of extra information that people were looking for, but the planning that Yvonne put into that. The painting of the animals took quite a bit of time, so Kathleen and Yvonne got involved in those, and then there was one damaged, and we were thinking this is going to be a trend now, but luckily enough there was only one.
Cormac, for anybody who's keen on nature, this is the special time of the year, and really you've got to go out every day. I mean, Yvonne's coming regularly in the park because otherwise you miss things.
Oh yeah, it's amazing. Even okay, we'll be wrapped up there in cold weather and wet weather there for a few weeks, but suddenly spring is around the corner. One day can make a difference. If the sun shines tomorrow, yeah, we'll have things coming out, like in the borders here now, they'll jump into life.
Yeah,
and
it's amazing.
Yvonne had a great eye for things like that. Again, the camera.
Yeah.
She was a huge photographer, you see. There were many a walk in the Knockreer, or the Domain, as Killarney people call it, because Lord Kinmare's Domain.
So close to the town, so it's wrapped around the town.
An area, and Knockreer, and all the way down to Ross Island. Indeed. That would be the Domain as well.
Patrick, just before we finish, going on a visit to maybe a problem area with Yvonne.
There would be occasions when the weekly meetings at the town hall and the town chambers, and there'd always be a list of, maybe now they'd be quite short, but there'd be a few properties problematic and they wouldn't be kept in its best. And the first thing was to find out the ownership. On a lot of occasions that would prove quite difficult, but it would mean that you'd have to make a number of calls and make inquiries about who owned this property. Now, a lot of the times people would have an idea, but they wouldn't know for sure. And then, of course, when you'd find out then for sure, the next one then was how to approach it. You couldn't go up and knock at the door and just say, listen, we've an issue here. So you'd wait for the occasion when they'd be out doing some tidying up, and you'd be passing the house and you'd knock at the door. And I remember one particular time they said gentleman came out anyway, and he was delighted and full of praise about all the work that had been done around the place. And before you'd know, Yvonne would be engaging with this to all the volunteers we have, and the next thing, the story would come up about said property down the town. You could see the change in the person's face straight away.
How did you
find out this? But very nicely the story would develop. We are going for the National Award this year, and it would be very nice if we could improve the site. And then she'd say very gently that, look, we believe that you're the owner of the property. And in a very short while, the person, I don't know if out of guilt or what, but they'd talked themselves in to not alone agreeing with improving the situation and the site, but they'd also go further, offering other things that they could do. I've seen this on two or three occasions, and we always got the desired effect. And
she used to have great training, of course, from the late Father Murphy, Archdeacon Murphy, who was very experienced in matters like that. Parenting Kinmare.
Yeah, she would have made a great politician.
I often said to her that she should have gone for her late father, I think, was a councillor, but she because she nearly knew everything that was going on, and everybody knew her, so she sailed through, I'd say, early easily.
Was that ever discussed, John?
No, Frank, I wouldn't be...
You wouldn't be consulted?
No.
It would have happened first, and you would have been told afterwards.
And I'd be told afterwards, right,
She was very straight talking, she wasn't someone who'd say things behind your back.
But very subtle, though.
She had good timing, Frank, she'd tell you very directly. I don't think that works very well in politics.
Cormac Foley and Patrick O'Sullivan, thank you both for joining us. Now we're going to a break and to the news, and we'll be back with you about 10:05.
If you ever find yourself stuck in the middle of the sea, I'll sail the world to find you. If you ever find yourself lost in the dark and you can't see, I'll be the light to guide you. Find out what we're made of when we are called to help our friends in need. You can count on me like 1, 2, 3, I'll be there. And I know when I need it, I can count on you like 4, 3, 2, and you'll be there. Cause that's what friends are supposed to do, oh yeah.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
You can count on me like 1, 2, 3, I'll be there.
The very full life of Yvonne Quill, guided by Yvonne's husband John and daughter Sandra. Today's programme was recorded on March the 12th. Your comments for future programmes, text 083 300 3300. 4066 712 3666, email franklewismangerton@gmail.com, or write Frank Lewis, Killarney, Mangerton Road, Buckross, Killarney. Now, outside the town hall in Killarney town, it's 7:30, and on a Sunday morning, to avoid traffic noise, I hope. This was the hub of Yvonne Quill's 25 years of full-time Killarney looking good. I'm joined by Michael Gleeson, Killarney town councillor for 20 years and a member of Kerry County Council for 30 years. And Teddy Town's volunteer for many of those years. All the way from Dingle in this early hour, Mihála Quillán, archaeologist, volunteer and formerly Kerry County Council Environmental Awareness Officer and Deputy Manager for the Killarney Municipal District. And by Michael O'Leary, former Killarney Town Clerk. Michael Gleeson.
The wonderful thing about her commitment was that it was focused on leadership by example. She never asked anybody to do any work that she hadn't or wasn't prepared to do herself.
Mihál, Yvonne's loyalty as a friend.
She always stood by her family, first and foremost. She would often talk about John and her children and her grandchildren in particular, and I think the time she gave them. There was a friend and relation of hers, Jen. I was asking Sandra about her earlier this morning, who ironically died of the same thing as Yvonne herself. But she was very ill and had to go to Cork frequently, and Yvonne was the woman who drove her and stayed with her and drove her back home again.
Michael, Yvonne mended fences and bonded friendships with buns and cakes.
Especially the buns with the icing on them. And then on very special occasions, the wonderfully special cake arrived, appropriately ornamented on top. And that was proof positive to all of us. A voluntary committee, and it's very important to stress that to all of us, that we had achieved the objectives that she and we had agreed on and that were achieved, and that was always hugely appreciated by everybody. And of course it was a way of ensuring that we remained part of the wonderful effort that continued in the town all through her life, and hopefully in her memory will continue thereafter.
John, all of us sampled Yvonne's baking. Was there any resentment at home in Ballymount at all of the extra work and resources these buns and cakes demanded?
No, Frank, because there was always a supply in the house as well. It was very important to keep me happy.
My dad was spoiled for his entire marriage. But I think my mom had an amazing understanding too of how important it was to bring people together personally as well as work-wise or friendship or whatever. So she was always celebrating, and you know, having breakfast at the town hall or in our house or wherever was as important as the job at hand. A couple of times Mom was out of action over the years with after shoulder surgery, and I was drafted in to bake cakes, scones and various things for people in the town hall, whether they be, I think I did a christening cake.
How did you feel about that?
I was very busy with young children, and there was no way I was saying no to my mother. You just didn't say no to her, so I just got on with it. It was factored in.
Was there a certain resentment though?
No, because if I rang my mother with any sort of story, she'd be there in minutes usually.
Payback.
Yeah, so I she was well owed, Frank, and yeah. I was only delighted to help her, but it did make me laugh. Like, it was, I knew that they were as important to her as members of the family.
Michael O'Leary, in your experience, how unusual was the relationship of Yvonne with the town hall?
It was probably very unusual, because I think that there might have been people in the town who felt that she worked in the town hall, because the town hall was the hub of the administration, you know, for the whole Tidy Towns, Killarney looking good area. So we would be working on all of the administration, the applications for the various competitions that we were in. So Yvonne was hugely involved in all that, together with Eileen O'Connor and particularly Margaret Piggott. So it would not be unusual for to come in at any stage and find Yvonne inside in the town hall. Just hearing Michael mention about the scones were particularly useful for getting people in on time for meetings.
Going back to the model, Michael, might it be something that might be built in other, might be used, that involving the volunteer to a greater extent and integrating them more into the local authority?
Well, the trouble with that, Frank, is that in order to have that level of integration, you're requiring a small organisation. The same applies both in the private sector and in the public sector, in that smaller units are better for service delivery, because you have a level of informality there that you just cannot have with larger organisations. Larger organisations need more bureaucracy. They just can't operate at the same level as the smaller ones can. Whereas it may be very desirable, it's extremely hard to achieve.
There's just one further question I was going to put to you about that. As we'll hear throughout this morning, Yvonne was a strong, independent woman. How does that fit in the local authority structure?
When you asked me if I could remember stories, I could remember some stories, but I probably wouldn't say them on the air, because they might have meant that I needed to remind people of the limits within which they should operate, shall we say.
Very diplomatically put.
I mean, for a model like that to work at any government or organisation, you need somebody with the commitment that Yvonne Quill had, and that was willing to give the time. I mean, it was endless. It isn't common.
But you've been in and out of local authorities. I mean, that independence, that strength, I would have thought within local authority you need to be prepared to bend and to be malleable and to fit in and maybe to sacrifice some.
I think Yvonne had a remarkable pride in Killarney in particular, and anything that was going to be good for the town, she wanted it to happen, and it was a matter of making people bend to her way of thinking sometimes. We're listening to noise in the background here. In a way, it's almost the ultimate compliment to her, because there's pictures of these streets 25 years ago, completely litter-strewn,
indeed.
And at 7 o'clock in the morning, there's three or four people out cleaning them now with machines.
Indeed.
And that's what she made happen, along with Mike, and Michael on my left, Michael Deason as well.
Yes, yes.
So it's that remarkable achievement of bringing officials and elected politicians and the community with her. Because when we were looking at Anton Floral in Killarney, it wasn't just meeting the great and the good. Yvonne would insist on stopping at all of the small community groups around Killarney town that were working on their own estates or working in their own schools, and making sure that they were part of the picture as well, that it wasn't just the upper levels. And I think Yvonne was that glue that held it all together.
You make the point about her vivacious and enthusiastic attitude to everything. As I say, I'm quoting you, but perhaps her greatest attribute, you say.
For Yvonne, it was really, she was the gate opener in Killarney, because when we started environmental awareness in Kerry first, some tidy towns were very active and some were not. And I remember there was a big campaign on home composting and giving people home composters and showing them how they worked and getting them to deal with that element of waste. And Yvonne had an abhorrence of food waste, of all things. I mean, working in the cafes and her great interest in food, it was a terrible thing to throw away food. And when we wanted to get something done in Killarney, it was usually a call to the two Michaels here and Yvonne Quill, and doors open, getting into schools. I remember doing composting workshops in schools around Killarney at a very early stage, and Yvonne was present at all of them. So she would introduce you, she would break down the barriers and get the thing done. And thereafter, it was very, very easy to get things started in Killarney, because you were looking for a champion that would get people involved. I was passing down by the community school this morning. I remember, and I think you were there as well, Michael Gleeson, planting trees, but they weren't just trees. It was an edible orchard where there was apples and plums and nuts planted. But again, it was Yvonne Quill talking to the school that got it in there.
Indeed. Michael Gleeson, how is Killarney looking good, the whole Tidy Towns effort? How is it missing Yvonne's close relationship with Town Hall?
In life, some people are irreplaceable, and one has to accept that. But I think the memory of her commitment will continue for a long time to be our inspiration, and the inspiration of generations to come. Because once you set a standard, and that with the right people remain involved, they will continue to insist on the standard. As Mihála Kilian said, we all remember a saying by some national reporter that Killarney was best viewed in the rear view mirror.
Indeed.
Of a car leaving town. that inspired her and many other people to start the transformation. And one very important thing about Yvonne's commitment to the town is that it has radiated outwards. I live 4 kilometres from the town, and there's a very active group out there, as there is back towards the Fossa area and out towards Mucras and all the other roads out to Tralee Road. They have all, like a tree, they have grown, the branches have grown from the work that was done within Killarney, and that's an incredible legacy to leave to an entire community.
I just want to make the point that Yvonne had great help as well, and you've mentioned Eileen O'Connor, Margie Piggott in the offices here, but also Kathleen Foley, because Yvonne never travelled solo. Kathleen was always with her, and between them they had great time, but they did great work.
Just to build on that, I was thinking of Kathleen Foley myself when Michael here was speaking about the schools, and very much like, say, from the town hall's point of view, we would have been very involved, say, in the general administration, in the maintenance works, but definitely things like the schools, the community things, they were Yvonne's. She drove those, particularly with Kathleen Foley. I think Kathleen was always at her side when doing that. And then when you mention other people, of course, the late Father Murphy. She very much found a comrade in arms when Father Murphy arrived into town. And the two of them then became a pair, and became a very recognisable pair throughout the country as the faces of tidy towns in Killarney.
Michael Gleeson, Mihalo Kulan, Michael O'Leary, thank you indeed for talking to us. We'll move on.
You can count on me like 1, 2, 3, I'll be there.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
You can count on me like 1, 2, 3, I'll be there.
Travelling the life of Yvonne Quill, our guides, her husband John and daughter Sandra, now we're in College Square where Yvonne grew up, above the business, the cafe, the bakery, the grocery shop. We're joined by Donald Gleeson, who grew up and still trades down the street in College Square, and by Teresa Irwin, a friend of Yvonne's from the time she came to live in College Street over the general accident, now Owen Casey's, and by Michelle Cooper-Galvin. Michelle grew up between here and Countess Road, where we talked earlier. John, your first trip to the house here in Cottage Street.
I remember it well, really well. But I was going to Yvonne for, I don't know, maybe a month or two. And it was coming up towards Christmas. Of course, being the cute lady she was, she says, oh, I'll invite him in anyway for the tea, you know.
Yeah.
And I came to the door at the side of the house, and the door was unlocked, but there was nobody there. And I pushed the door in, shyly, I must say, at the time. And
you've overcome
I
that.
Looked up the stairs, and there's Padraig Fleming with a hoover on the top of the stairs. Her dad, hoovering. And I'm saying, Jesus Christ, is this the way things are going now? I'm saying to myself, I never picked up a hoover at home. Am I in the right house, or should I turn around and go back? But I have to say, it's about the only time I saw Paddy filming using a hoover ever since.
Donna, fair day, monthly, remember all the sheep and pigs, the whole of College Street full of donkeys and calves. What was it like in your father's, now your shop?
I'm not sure when they actually finished, but both sides of the street were covered with cattle and pigs and sheep and I suppose chickens. You'd hear the pigs squealing at 6 o'clock in the morning. That's the first thing to wake you up. And it went on all day then.
The town was much quieter. You played football on the street.
Oh, we did, of course, yeah. College Square was a fine... You could have a 3-4 side there, no bother. Yeah.
Were you
no
any good
cars,
at it?
Useless.
Teresa, Yvonne was a stalwart of the Friary Youth Club, and you had your young dancers together putting on a show, Babes in the Hippie Woods, that became a step too far for the Friars.
We took part in the show and it was considered so good, it was invited to go to the Opera House in Cork, mm-hmm. where we went and put on a wonderful show there. But all the hijinks going up on the train and coming down on the train, I think, was too much for the Friars. We were invited to the Olympia in Dublin, but no, we weren't allowed to go there. But Yvonne was very involved now in that. She threw herself in completely. Mm-hmm. She took the part of the mother, the babes, and my husband Peter was the father. So
you weren't afraid of anything developing?
No. Maybe she had her eye up in, you know, up in Barlaymount at the time. Our friendship grew from there.
Michelle, you remember Yvonne's mother, Peggy?
This was regular, every morning. Every morning, 10:30, 10:30, you were in here. I remember the people coming from the friary in, they'd get their brown bread first of all, and there'd be a fight at the door, like if there wasn't enough brown bread there for all the ladies coming from Mass. Mm-hmm. And then you'd go in, you'd have the cup of tea and the scone, and I mean, everyone in town had wonderful memories of all the various cakes, you know, the eclairs, the three corners, the vanilla slices, the long donuts. Mrs. Fleming, she had the cigarette and the ash about 2 inches long.
Sandra, the Fleming home here was also a focus of your early life.
We used to come in to my grandparents' house upstairs for Sunday lunch. Food was a huge part of our lives. My grandmother was an amazing cook, and my mother. And we'd come in, even during the weekdays, my grandmother would do a 3-course lunch for my grandfather. And it wasn't, you know, the dessert was made by her, not from the bakery or the cafe, which I found amazing. Everything was just so, she had always beautiful silver cutlery.
Michal, with this kind of background, with this kind of depth of background and stories going back generations, there was a great head start in doing something in town, wasn't there?
There was. I suppose in a way baking is the analogy of her life, because she was a wonderful baker, and everything else she put her hands to, it was a matter of picking the right ingredients and getting the product at the end of it, whether it was Tidy Towns or whether... I mean, you're talking about the dance troupe at the time. Her interest in the arts was huge, and chatting to Sandra there, she studied art for a year before she came back home to help out. But she would always be interested in anything artistic going on, books, music, very interested in contacting us for solstice dates and equinox dates. Herself and Eileen O'Connor came to Dingle just after COVID to visit all the archaeological sites.
The most amazing archaeological tour.
And I think the week she died, I remember sending her a picture of Cuppin Circle rock art that she'd been talking about one time. There was a great breadth to her life.
John, did it take you long to get into the hoovering?
I never really perfected it, to be honest with you. Just something I did against my will.
Oh, you did do it, though.
Oh, yes, I did. Did indeed.
You didn't.
Well, I would say, like, as much as we're talking about Mom being an incredible, independent woman, which she was, she ran our lives, she ran her business. She kind of did it all. Mom was definitely the head honcho at home as well, keeping the house in order, doing all of the cooking, looking after Dad. He was absolutely spoiled.
Yeah.
She was an amazing woman. He definitely did very well when he chose my mother.
Donna, Yvonne, as a neighbour, you have a memory of the saddest day when there was an explosion in the laundry and your brother James was killed on Saturday, July the 13th, 2013.
And I remember the first person in the door was Yvonne with a beautiful coffee cake and I'd say eclairs and all the whole bevy of stuff. I thought it was a wonderful gesture.
Indeed.
She was the very first person in with that. You know, she was a great neighbour and had a heart of gold.
Michael Gleeson, with that kind of empathy, with that kind of feeling for people, I mean, when somebody like that comes to you and asks you to be a volunteer, how can you refuse?
You can't, but that's what Donna said there. Wonderful generosity of spirit always typified her in everything she did, and she did it with a joie de vivre, with a joyful spirit. Mm-hmm. Just a little aside, the seldom time that my mother would, maybe once a fortnight, come shopping into the square, into Jimmy Gleeson, God rest his lovely soul, she would always come here for, she loved coming here for that rare thing then, a cup of tea and a bun, or a scone, or whatever it was. And so when my fateful day came in 1975, I was approaching 1975, I rarely took instructions from my mother, but I did then. She ordered me to get my wedding cake baked here and transported to Cavan, the 8th of August 1975, so they sampled and greatly enjoyed the cake in Cavan.
Michal.
And speaking of cakes, when my father was 80 a number of years ago, all the family gathered in Killarney for the weekend, and Yvonne got to hear of it, and we went to a restaurant to eat, and after the meal this magnificent cake was wheeled out, and wheeled out because it was so huge. There were several tiers to it, magnificently decorated as a gift, and wouldn't take any payment for it afterwards. Mm. And my other memory of her interest in the Irish language, and she had a huge interest in it, and often came in looking for words. And I was only looking at texts over the last year, and this time last year she sent a text, "Gomeri mead bio or an thom shaharist."
Teresa,
she was on Duolingo. We were both on it and perfecting our Irish. It was wonderful, you know. Mm-hmm. She loved the Irish.
You have another example of Yvonne getting completely immersed in what she touches.
Windsurfing was one of them on the back beach in Glenbay. Every weekend when she closed the door here on a Saturday evening, she packed her car with her children and all their friends. I mean, packed, you couldn't do it in this day and age. And towed a caravan to the back beach in Glenbay. And she fed the children, took them up to the entertainment in the Ross Inn. The following morning she got up, she fed them, she came in, she collected her mum and brought her and the auntie Maureen, who wasn't really her aunt, she was her friend, but everyone called their friends and relations aunt, and brought her to Glenbay, fed her, brought her home, came back to the children, and Monday was her free day, as Sandra knows, and they had a wonderful day until they left that evening, packed up to come back the following day again. But while there, she saw my husband Peter on his windsurfer, and right go wrong, she wanted to go on a windsurfer, and she stayed at it until she was up directly on top of it, and became quite good at it.
There was a particular honour, maybe a first honour, that Yvonne was given, Teresa.
I'm very happy to say that Yvonne was the first recipient of our Woman of the Year award in Sir Optimist. I was the president at the time, and we bestowed the honour on her. She and her team had just won the gold medal for the Tidy Towns, which was the big thing, as you know, in Killarney. First time ever winning this award, yeah. And we just felt she was the woman to get our first award.
Great. Donna Gleeson, Teresa Irwin, Michelle Cooper Galvin, and again Michael Gleeson and Michal O'Quillan. Thank you indeed for joining us. We'll move on.
You can count on me like 1, 2, 3. I'll be there.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
You can count on me like 1, 2, 3. I'll be there.
The very full life of Yvonne Quill, guided by Yvonne's husband John and daughter Sandra. Today's programme was recorded on March the 12th. Your comments for future programmes, text 083 300 3300 or phone 066 712 3666. We're in Barlaymont, looking down on this tremendous view down over Loch Lane, Brown Island, Heron, Inishvallen, the Tomies shore over the far way, the vague outline of the Eagle's Nest in the middle, then Tork and Mangerton and all the way over to the county bounds. We're in the Quill home on Barlaymount, and we're joined by other members of the Quill family, John and Yvonne's sons Peter and Sean, and my neighbour Mick Myers, and by son-in-law Peter Dunley and daughter-in-law Mairead Quill, Neo Donoghue, I'm told, from Glenflesk. John, while building this house here in Barlaymount, you were moving sows.
There were people required for to block gaps and block roads and to make sure that the sow went to the right place. So Yvonne just arrived at the right time, and he says, "Out there, Hugh, and block off that." She thought it was maybe a calf or something, she didn't know. Mm-hmm. And I don't think she'd seen too many sows. Anyway, the sow came out, took off, and she did this, a bit of a jiggle for a while to stop it, and then jumped up in the ditch. The sow went flying past by. And my father, "Jesus Christ.
What did you bring home?"
That was it.
Mick, Yvonne loved town, but she became a part-time country girl and a farmer's wife when she got married and gave huge support to Barlaymount and Fossa Parish for 50 years.
She fitted in very well for a towns girl.
Yeah.
And if we brought out a towns... I married a towns girl myself, and when I brought my own wife out, my father said, to me, she won't even stay here, said a week with your boy. But she wasn't alone, and Yvonne was there as well, and Yvonne was a fantastic support to myself and my wife. She got me involved in lots of things, you know, the tidy towns, more over in Fuss especially. We'd done a big clean up there, but Yvonne was the driving force behind the whole lot of it. Yvonne wouldn't ask you to do anything unless she was prepared to do it herself. We were both very lucky, I think, being honest about it, like to get the two girls we did get, because any other one would have left us, I'd say.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Yvonne was a huge supporter of her grandchildren.
Mom absolutely championed all of the grandchildren, so there's five of them, and Anna's the oldest one. Anna got kind of involved in art at a young age, and Mom interested in art as well, very creative, absolutely got every last bit of equipment. Every week there'd be something new.
One of the last things that she did with Anna was a painting of Mockra's house.
Anna was preparing for her own exhibition in September, and so she had two of her last paintings were of Mockra's house, actually, the dining room and the dressing room. And Mom wanted to see it every single day, you know, how it was going, and she'd comment on this should be moved right or left, or, you know, a change and a shadow and that kind of thing. But that was right up until the last weeks of Mom's life.
Sean, your mother was always current, up to date on tech and everything else.
I suppose she got the love of technology first from her father, my grandfather, who would have, you know, I think he was the first person in Kerry to own a computer, or at least we were always told that growing up.
Well, he was also, I remember him telling me himself that he was involved with the Killarney Electrical Company, the setting up of the place on the Mill Road.
Once I started showing an interest in technology when I was a bit younger, Mom was the one who was forefront in getting a computer into the house, and I suppose, like, any time I kept on showing an interest, she really just pushed that. Like, as soon as I started getting into digital art, she went down to, I can't remember what computer shop it was now, but came home with a tablet that day. I'd never even heard of a tablet at the time, didn't know what it was, but she saw an interest, and how could she improve that? And that kind of continued right up until the end. She was always interested in everything and anything.
Peter, she loved the beach.
We bought a small caravan, and we used to go back every Saturday evening, and we'd come home Monday evening because the cafe was closed on Mondays. The caravan was getting older, and one year we decided we were heading off. I presume it was May, and the weather was right. And if I remember correctly, John was doing silage or something like that. So we said we'd hook up the caravan anyway, and we'd drive back ourselves. So Yvonne was driving, I was in the passenger seat, Sandra was in the back seat. She would have been very, very young. So we got about, I'd say, halfway back to Killorglin, and it was a nice flat stretch of road and a straight stretch of road. And whatever way I looked out the side of the window, I seen a wheel coming past us at about 60 miles an hour, I presume. Yeah. And I said, "Jeez, there's a wheel after passing us." And Yvonne said, "What?" And I said, "There's a wheel after passing us."
And
sure
didn't
we look, but we looked into the rear view mirror. Sure, there was only one wheel on the caravan. We were tearing back the road 50 miles an hour on an axle, So we didn't make it to the beach that day. And we had to ring John in the middle of the silage to come and collect us and rescue us.
Peter, son-in-law, Peter Dunlea.
I remember the very first time I arrived down from Kildare with Sandra and arrived up to the door, and, you know, you don't know what's going on, and all of a sudden there's people everywhere, and I hear there's the Stations of the Cross has been held, so there's people everywhere around the place. And I arrive in the door, and I remember there was two ladies standing there baking away, and of course nobody would say who they were, what they were, or the usual bit of who are you, where are you from, what are you up to, and the question, well, which one of us do you think is Sandra's mother? Straight up, this lady asks. And I'm looking around, and there's two ladies, there's one buxom lady full of devilment, and there's another lady slight similar to my wife. So I went straight for the lady similar to my wife. Oh yeah, no, well, it's not her, it's me. And that was straight in, fell hook, line and sinker for it, and from then on she caused absolute ructions and devilment between the pair of us.
Maria, daughter-in-law.
Yvonne was just so welcoming, and she loved to head away for the day here, there and everywhere, and I was a good passenger with her, and we'd love our trips up to Cork. My aunt Mary Harmon used to come with us, and Kinmare was another favourite place. They'd love to go down, and they'd spend hours inside in Hallisey's buying things for cooking and baking, and then we'd always have to have our tea and coffee and cake somewhere. But she was fabulous. And as well, say with Abby and Luke, I mean, there was nobody like Granny. She just was the best. Abby even said one year, she goes, "Mom, Santa's presents are lovely, but the bag of toys and presents that Granny gives are just better." And they always made loads of noise. Yeah. That was the great thing about Granny's presents.
Sandra, your mother was a fiercely independent woman. I mean, she was somebody who... She was her own woman. But yet she had the empathy, she had the diplomatic ability, she had the ability to get on with people and not to show that you're really going to end up doing what I want you to do. You'll really think that you wanted to do it that way.
Very capable. If she wanted to do something, she'd just find out how it was done and go and do it. And we were brought up like that, really. I think one thing I really remember from growing up with Mom and my granddad was that if I said I couldn't do something, which children do all the time, I was just told there is no such word as can't. You can do it, you just have to figure out how. She'd get out of any scrape, very capable of managing. Mom worked full time. She also looked after all of us. She travelled everywhere. And she brought us all along with her. So we had great experiences and we were quite confident heading off into the world ourselves. And she allowed us, like, freedom to have fun.
John, I believe when the colours were being decided for the house, you weren't consulted.
God, it's amazing. And it was just as well, Frank, because one day I thought I was putting up a few brownie pints. And I decided I'd paint the room before she'd come home.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got the paint. I thought it was a lovely colour when I bought it.
Yeah.
And I painted the room. I gave it two coats of paint. I can still see it. And it was a purple.
Purple?
Yeah, it was a purple. And when you go into the room, you'd actually be blinded. You couldn't. So that was the end of my...
you weren't consulted any further.
About 2 months before Mom passed away, I think, she was in Cork for a week or two in the hospital, and Dad was going painting the house, and I was instructed, get those colours from Pete Dunley, show him the colour, get him to pick the colours, because Dad is not to go near any sort of colour chart. And so Pete picked out the colours, she okayed them, and the house was painted before we arrived home.
The son-in-law was given more credibility than you had.
Isn't it desperate? Isn't it desperate? After all my years, all my efforts.
I think, Frank, about Yvonne, she was so generous. Yvonne was like, and good humoured. I mean, when you talk to her, you'd feel good, like.
Indeed.
But she was a very generous woman, and she was brilliant to her neighbours and her friends.
Mick Myers, John, the father, and Mairead, and Peter again, and Sean, and Sandra, thanks for talking to me.
Thank you. Thanks very much. You can count on me like 1, 2, 3, I'll be there.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
You can count on me like 1, 2, 3, I'll be there.
Today we remember and celebrate Yvonne Quill, my guide, our Yvonne's husband John, and daughter Sandra Dunley. Just before Christmas in 1959, a fire in Courtney's home and bakery in College Street in Killarney. Yvonne and her family spent some time in her grandfather's house in Countess Road, where at 7 in the morning, we now are joined by neighbour and lifelong friend, Johnny Maguire. Johnny, as a result of Yvonne coming to live next door, you went off golden syrup for life.
They saved some of the treasure from the fire, and in the garage, which was beside where we're talking now, and we had the run of the whole place, and I never knew anything about golden syrup until Yvonne introduced me to it, and there was this massive big tin of golden syrup, which I, of course, once I got the taste of this, I consumed ad nauseum, and I haven't got off golden syrup for the rest of my life. I've never eaten a bit of it.
Sandra, you thought you might have diary entries from your mother Yvonne's grandfather from this time, short one-liners about them being in the house.
I have a good few diaries, Frank. Just the one I had brought with me this morning has Just the entry of the day Mom was born, and it says, daughter born to Padraig and Peg last night. Wet and windy, all is well.
Gosh, that was actually written at the time.
Yep, it's here February 1951 in his own in handwriting. Other ones I have then from when they lived here in 59 and 60, and those entries were more focused on the girls were very loud today. Things like that, or, you know, Yvonne arrived.
Yeah.
All noise. So, very nice.
Yeah. John, it's a lovely hour of the morning, isn't it? And the birds are singing in the background there. It's the most magical hour of the day.
Normal rising time for me, Frank. When you're doing a bit of farming and things like that, you have to get out of bed early in the morning.
So it's what time are you normally up at?
Well, this morning, no, thanks to you, I was up at 6:15.
I'm sorry for getting up.
Thank you very much.
Even still, you can imagine, I mean, even way back, Johnny is talking about a time when the number of houses here were far fewer and everything was much quieter, but you can still get the sense of being in the country here. In 1959, there was no public lighting on Countess Road. Your home and Fleming's, a working farm behind, across the road, a big field with tinkers or travellers now, their horses. Johnny, there was nobody of your age around about. You were about 7, Yvonne a few years older, about 9 or 10. Yvonne brought excitement to your life.
Yvonne broadened my horizon. She, and it's only now I've realised this, with the influence of her grandfather and so well read and so well educated, that she brought stories into my life. Stories of Robinson Crusoe, adventure.
Oh, yeah.
All about adventure.
Yeah.
And we were playing adventure at that time. That's what's come back to me. And she created a whole magical world for me because I was effectively a boy living here on his own. I had no real neighbours. My neighbour beside me was a Cahill Healy from Carsevine. She had no children and she lived in a house called Barnish Rada.
Oh, of
the
course.
The neighbours on the other side then, below Yvonne's house, were two bachelor brothers, the O'Connor brothers, who came back from Australia. They'd been shepherds. And they had their house was called Shepherd's Home. So effectively on this side of the road, I had no one to play with. And then this wonderful person landed
dynamo.
Beside me. Dynamo and dynamic all her life. And I went into that. It was like being in a whirlwind of adventure constantly.
Did she
and she called all the shots.
Did
everything.
You? Oh, I
all
see
the
it.
Whole time.
You followed.
I followed. Yeah. Where Yvonne led and we all followed around
you
after.
Know what that's like.
Yes. And for the rest of her life, we followed.
Sandra, your mother was extremely flexible and practical in a crisis. She never panicked. She always taught you and your brothers, if there was smoke or any danger, run.
Oh,
leave everything behind except people.
Absolutely. Every sort of thing that would be, you could imagine in every family home growing up, from, you know, things going wrong in the cafe to things going wrong at home, accidents, people splitting the head open, all that. She never, ever panicked. She just would get stuck in, sort it out, check everyone was okay. Once people were alive, my mother did not care what we did, what sort of bad behaviour there was. She'd, you know, she'd say her bit all right, but there was no huge punishment. She'd just get stuck in, she'd help, she'd sort out the problems and move on. You wouldn't be hearing about things for years and years. She was brilliant with all our friends. She would accept anybody. We'd bring home all sorts of characters over the years, from younger years to the teenage years to coming back as young adults. I know some of them I wouldn't like having coming in my own door now. One morning at home in Barleymount, there was a knock on the door and it was like a really stormy day, torrential rain, the whole lot. And there was a big, huge, dark man outside the door with a little boy who was drowned wet, who we figured out was my first cousin. And he had ran away from home. This truck driver stopped, and he lived up the road from us, stopped, picked him up and brought him to our house, the closest house. And Mom brought him in, took no notice, you know, dried him off. I think there was a big cut. She stuck him into the car over to A&E, brought him back. I don't think my aunt even noticed that he was. She just didn't panic. And she'd say, do you know, you didn't panic then because of her.
Yeah.
She was so calm. You just did what you were told. And as well, she was extremely capable. If we had a puncture, my mother wasn't phoning Dad or stopping looking for a man. She was out changing that tyre and I was out beside her learning how to do it.
Yvonne and a crisis, John.
I suppose when she met me, that was a crisis. To be fair, down to all our years, we were together for 52 and we had very, very few, I suppose, crises as such. We'd have things that would happen. but they just roll on and we'd roll on with them. We didn't panic about things.
So you were both laid back?
Well, reasonably laid back anyway. I there's times I get kind of excited about things, all right, you know, you'd have to have somebody in the house.
Sandra's would... nodding her head.
You would have to have somebody in the house who would panic a little bit.
Mom might swoop in and mop up any crisis before Dad would be notified.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there was a good bit of that in the house. All
oh,
right,
was there?
You know,
they were doing things unknown to you.
There was four against poor old me, you know,
was
that's
there?
The way it was.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I think John, I have to jump in here because I think John Quill suffers from an inferiority complex regarding his own abilities. And he's far more capable than he lets on.
Indeed. And 25 years working full-time as a volunteer, her unique relationship with Town Hall, Kathleen Foley, Patrick Tracy, Father Murphy, and you probably more than anyone else of her passionate commitment, her absolute love of Killarney. Johnny?
Her drive. She had a vision for Killarney, and her ambition for Killarney was to win the National Tidy Towns competition. And along the way, she won many other accolades for Killarney, the Antoine Floral and various other wonderful awards for our town. And in that process, she galvanised the community. She was the heart and soul of the community. She was for the people. She was one of the people. She was old stock. And she knew everyone and everything about our town. Every back lane, every estate, who lived where, who they were connected to, and how to get things done. Mm. She was the link between the people and the town hall. She was the daily visitor to the town hall. Mm. As she had her own space in the town hall, she was that highly regarded. Mm. And she drove the whole Tidy Towns campaign in our town. She was then joined by the wonderful Father Murphy, who retired home to Killarney. Interesting thing about Father Murphy and Yvonne and myself, we all lived in the Countess Road. Yvonne lived here when I was a little boy, and Father Murphy lived here when I was a teenager. And I can remember Father Murphy coming up the road here, and the way he marched, he was like a soldier coming up the road. One of my jobs annually was to paint the front wall, and he came over to me and he was talking about how it was great to see young men doing some work. He lived in a house up the road from us that
so
time.
So he was responsible for getting you involved?
And I think he planted a seed in my head. And then later, when I came back to Killarney over 30 years ago, and my brother and I started in business, I was introduced when he retired through Yvonne back with Father Murphy, Yvonne and myself. But I have to say, I was only a Johnny come lately. Yvonne and Father Murphy were the leaders and they had driven it, and that is Yvonne to me. She was a dynamic force for the betterment of our town.
You don't wake up in the middle of the night either in a pleasant memory or a nightmare with the experience of Yvonne.
Yvonne has kept me awake many the night. What do you mean by that? I better explain that to her husband. Well, obviously when I was a child and she made me sick with all that golden syrup, yeah. I wasn't the better of that for a long time. And then
just before we come to later times,
yeah.
In the in-between period,
yes.
You weren't a precursor to John Quill playing courtesy or...
I'm only beginning to know where you're going with this question, line of question, and I have to say that if I was, it was something that's a dim distant memory to me, because I was sorry. But I forgot one part of the story, in that Yvonne moved back into town, I moved away for education and college, but then when I came back, every time I came back, it was into the cafe, going to school, after school, for the famous buns. And I mean, my God almighty, that was a big step up from the golden syrup and the famous eclairs in the cafe.
Yeah.
As I say, when I came back to Killarney over 30 years ago and started up and got involved in the commercial life of the town, and Yvonne was leading the Killarney Looking Good and the Tidy Towns, and Padraig Tracy said to me one morning, he said, would I have 10 minutes to spare down in the Cathedral car park? And then my life was consumed with Yvonne's plans for our town. And the highlight of that was the winning of the Tidy Towns in 2011.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Johnny, thanks for talking to us.
Not at all. Tough fault to rot.
Imagine a public sculptor in Killarney remembering and celebrating the spirit of Yvonne Quill, an eternal flame to inspire all of us today and future generations, to stimulate her unique leadership and commitment to town, to nature, to the arts, to family and friends. Those down in their luck and those cresting the wave, and the joy, excitement and happiness in which all of this was done, an inspiration to all. From the delights of the cafe to the heroism, real heroism, living for your place,
that pinnacled in the 2011 National Tidy Towns win. Thanks to all of those who took part in the recording at sunrise on a Sunday morning, my special guest Yvonne's husband John and daughter Sandra Dunlea. Sandra made the contacts and gathered the stories. Location, sound and programme coordination to Yvonne Lewis. Post-production, Colette Foley. From me, Frank Lewis, until the last Saturday in April, the 29th, when we'll have our annual Dawn Chorus Walk in a place with deciduous trees, a garden or wood or wherever. Where do you suggest? Let me know. Until then, thanks for your company.